Well, we begin this evening with a question. What is a believer? So what's the answer? Well, we'll let Jacob speak first. Genesis chapter 32, verse 30, Jacob says this. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Did you hear that? Jacob, newly converted, says a believer has seen God face to face and lived to tell the tale. That's what a believer is. I've seen God and I've lived to tell the tale. So please come with me to that chapter, Genesis 32. I'm particularly looking at verses 22 to 32. And we'll give tonight's message a title. It's How Can I Become a Believer? And we have three things to say, three points. Point number one is this. Who is Jacob? The chapter's about Jacob. Who is he? Well, Jacob grew up in a godly home. His father was Isaac and his mother was Rebekah. He was also a twin. He was the smooth one. And his brother Esau was the hairy one. Now, Esau was Dad's favourite. And in many ways, it's difficult not to like Esau. You get a feel of the man. He's a sort of rugby-playing type. He's a man's man. He's an attractive personality. But Jacob, by contrast, he was particularly close to his mum. And to be honest, it's difficult to like Jacob. Now, do you play shotgun? There have been times when I've left the house with my kids and someone has shouted, shotgun! And because they're the first to say shotgun, that apparently gives them the right to sit in the front seat of the car. Unless Mrs. Hemmings is present. Shotgun, you get the first choice. Well, no matter how quick you are at saying shotgun, Jacob is the sort of person who's going to beat you every time. At school, he's the kid who always gets his way, either by cheating or by pulling the wool over the teacher's eyes. At work, he's the man who'll get promoted first. He's ruthless, ingenious, ambitious. He's ready to stab you in the back. And at home, he's the child who resents the other children. After all, he's smarter, he's quicker, he's more deserving than they are. So Jacob, he's clever, he's quick on his feet, he's selfish, he's ingenious, he's ambitious, he knows what he wants, and he'll do anything to get it. He's not an attractive personality. He's not likable. Because he looks after number one. And although he's grown up in a godly home, as far as Jacob is concerned, he doesn't need God. He's too quick on his feet. He can sort out his life without God being involved. Now, as a young man, Jacob resented Esau. Although they were twins, Esau was born first, which gave him certain rights and privileges which Jacob didn't have. As far as Jacob was concerned, well, of the two twins, he was the more gifted. And as the more gifted, he was therefore the more deserving. Why should Esau, from an accident of birth, why should he come first? Why should he be heir? And so guess what? Not once, but twice, Jacob cheats his brother out of what was rightfully Esau's. And the second time it happens, Esau, he can't believe it. He's distraught, he's in a rage, and he says, is he rightly named Jacob? Jacob means a deceiver, a supplanter. He cheats. He's deceived me these two times. He took my birthright, and now he's taken my blessing. Well, Esau's not about to forget what Jacob has done. So Esau promises that when their father dies, he's going to kill Jacob. He's going to kill his twin brother. So what does Jacob do? He does a runner. He clears out. He leaves home. And as a young man, he flees to his uncle, Uncle Laban. On the way, at a place called Bethel, God meets with him. You can read about it in earlier chapters. It's a real experience of God, but it's not a saving experience. Jacob isn't changed by the experience. Well, by the time we get to chapter 32, many years have passed. Jacob has been to Uncle Laban's. He's spent a number of years there. He's now left Laban for good. He's on his way home. But if things were bad when Jacob left home, they're not much better now. In fact, Jacob's ambitions have brought him to the brink of disaster. His cleverness, his quickness of foot, his always trying to work out a better way of doing something, has brought him nothing but trouble. And his life without God has brought him only despair. Now, okay, as we've read, Jacob is very wealthy, but he's got 11 sons by 4 different women. Imagine that. And home life is a war zone. As wife one and wife two, Leah, Rachel, sisters, rivals, they just slug it out. And by the time we get to chapter 32, things are really desperate. He's on his way home, only to find that Esau, the brother who said he was going to kill him, Esau's coming this way. He's coming this way with 400 men. For all Jacob knows, he's coming to settle the old scores and to come and slaughter Jacob and his family. So when he gets the news, Esau's coming, Jacob is terrified. Verse 6. And the messengers returned to Jacob saying, "We came to your brother Esau. He is also coming to meet you with 400, and 400 men are with him." So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Can you imagine it? Older brother's coming this way, 400 men. What's he going to do? Well, he can't go back to Laban because he's burnt his boats with Uncle Laban. He can't wander off into the wilderness because in the wilderness there are lots of marauding tribes. Help! What am I going to do? You can almost hear Jacob say, remember he's a mummy's boy, you can almost hear him say, "Mummy, what am I going to do?" So clever, slippery Jacob, he goes into overdrive. Verse 7. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two companies. And he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company which is left will escape. That's a good idea. I'll split everything I've got into two companies. And then if Esau falls on one company, at least the other one will get away. But you've got to admit, Jacob, it's not looking terribly good, is it? If that's what you're having to resort to. So what else can you do when you're in a panic? What would you do? Well, he prays. That's what most people do in a panic. He prays. And so in verses 9 to 12, he cries to the God of heaven. And the prayer is real. It's humble. But Jacob, is it too late? Too late to start thinking about God and turning to him now. Verse 11, "Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children." But it's still not enough. Not enough for the man who's quick on his feet, the man who's used to outwitting his opponents. So what else am I going to do? What else? Come on, think. I know. And he prepares a series of presents for Esau. And if you're preparing presents for people, you couldn't get better, verse 14, than 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 foals. What a present. And so they're sent off, drove after drove, leave a gap between each one. And with each one send a servant, and the servant with a message. When you meet Esau, he says to the servants, verse 17, "When Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, saying, 'To whom do you belong and where are you going? Whose are these in front of you?' Then you shall say, 'They are your servant Jacob's.' It is a present sent to my lord Esau, and behold, he is also behind us." And you can see that the plan is you keep sending present after present after present. Esau meets the first one, the second one, the third one, the fourth drove, the fifth drove. Same message each time. This is a present for you. Jacob's on his way. The idea is by the time you get to the fifth present, and Esau will think, "Well, all this for me? Oh, Jacob." we'll let bygones be bygones. That's Jacob's hope, isn't it? Because he says, verse 20, I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterwards I will see his face. Perhaps he'll accept me. Perhaps he won't come and kill us. Perhaps he'll greet me with open arms and say, oh, Jacob. But it's still not enough. Can't sleep. Working on a solution. Esau coming this way. Thrashing around. What's he going to do next? Verse 22, and he arose that night, can't rest, can't settle, and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone. What's Jacob up to? Well, they're the actions of a man who's run out of options. His situation is in a mess. His family's a mess. Jacob's a mess. He's got nowhere left to run, has he? He's alone. He's desperate. What's he going to do? Do you see Jacob? Clever, smart Jacob. All his ingenuity, all his ambition, to all appearances, those things have destroyed him. He's driven into a corner. His sin, his me first, have returned to bite him. And you've got to say, okay, Jacob, how are you going to get out of this one? You've got nowhere left to go, have you? There's no escape from the situation in which you now find yourself. You're so clever, you're so smart, you always find a way. But he can't get out of this. And now he's ready to meet someone. The only one who can help. So point number two. Wrestling with God. Verse 24. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now, wrestling. Have you ever wrestled? Have you ever watched wrestling? This will show my age. I'm going back now 30, 40 years. Some of you may remember. ITV, Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock, there was wrestling. And you get such names as Giant Haystacks and Big Daddy and Mick McManus and Les Kellett and Johnny Two Rivers. You might remember them. Half of you probably don't know who I'm talking about. Anyway, then, as now, most of wrestling like that is showmanship, isn't it? But the wrestling that's going on here is serious. This is the real thing. Now, what happens when you wrestle? Do you stand 6 feet apart? No. When you wrestle, you come to grips. You hold, you grapple, you take hold of people and you throw them. You bring them down. When you wrestle, there's explosive violence. There's controlled aggression. The only time I've ever knocked anyone out was when I threw him down wrestling. It involves speed, strength, endurance, and cunning. Not just to be quick of body, are you, when you wrestle? It's all to do with being quick of mind. You're trying to outwit your opponent. And in that sense, Jacob should be good at wrestling. Jacob has spent all his life trying to outwit his opponents. He's good at wrestling. He's smart. He's clever. He's cunning. And so here's Jacob and this unknown, mysterious man. They're wrestling. It's not so much a clash of bodies. It's a clash of wills. Who's going to win? Well, it goes on and on and on, and one doesn't seem to get the better of the other. Until just before dawn, something dramatic happens to break the stalemate. Verse 25. Now, when he saw that he did not prevail against him, this is the mysterious man, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. So we're just a touch, the contest is over. Jacob's beaten. Because you can't wrestle, can you, with a dislocated hip? And in that moment, if Jacob hadn't suspected it before, he begins to recognize the identity of this mysterious man. Think of it. They've been grappling for half the night. It's been all blood and thunder. And then something as gentle as a touch, and Jacob is floored. What power this man has. He's no ordinary man. And of course, Jacob begins to realize, if he didn't know before, that actually he's been wrestling with God. The God who holds the universe in his hand. The God who could crush Jacob with a thought. But the God who conquers his wayward Jacob with the gentlest of touches. Verse 26, and he said, let me go, for the day breaks. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Let me go. He's not saying, look, get off. I've got to go. Let me break free. He's not saying that. Look, the dawn's coming. I've got to disappear by the time the sun's up. He said to Jacob, I've conquered. It's over. Give up. You're no match for me. I win. But Jacob doesn't let go. Because this is God. The God of my grandfather Abraham. The God of my father Isaac. The God who has promised good to me. How can I let you go? Unless you bless me. Especially now. Especially here. Especially when I'm in this situation. Let me go, for the day breaks. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. What's going on? You see, in a sense, Jacob's whole life has been a wrestling match. Even in the womb, Genesis 25, verse 22, we read of Jacob and Esau. They seem to be wrestling in the womb of their mother. And when they're born, when Jacob's born, he's holding onto the heel of his older brother. Jacob's whole life has been a wrestling match. He's been trying to outwit his opponents. Always seeking to get the better of everyone he meets. And at one level, he's struggling with men. But at another level, Jacob has been struggling with God. The young man from a godly home who thought he could go it alone, who thought by his own efforts he could make his way in the world. I don't need God. The young man who lived for himself, who went through this world taking what he wanted, who could take care of number one. And God says to Jacob, no. Jacob, with one touch I can bring you to your knees. And I have. Haven't I? Because Esau's on his way, and you've got nowhere to run. Nowhere left to hide. You can't get out of this one, Jacob. In this clash of wills, you've lost. So, Jacob, what are you going to do? Shall I abandon you? After all, Jacob, I've been with you, haven't I? Ever since Bethel, when I promised to look after you, I've been with you, but you haven't loved me. I've watched over you. I've protected you. I've been with you wherever you've been. But, Jacob, you haven't surrendered to me. So now as the dawn comes, as it's a new day, shall I leave you? Shall I abandon you to Esau? Let me go, for the day breaks. Jacob, is that what you want? And for the first time in his life, Jacob realizes, I need God. I need God more than anything else in the world. I want God more than anyone else in the world. I must have the Lord. Don't leave me. I won't let you go. Because only you can bless me. Only you can save me. I will not let you go unless you bless me. Going it alone has brought Jacob to the brink of disaster. What has God done? God's been behind it all, hasn't he? God has backed Jacob into a corner. He can't get out of this one. The man who's so quick and clever and good on his feet, he's been backed into a corner. There's nowhere to go. And all he can do is hold on to God and plead with him to bless him. In the words of Hosea chapter 12, Jacob wept. He's weeping. Jacob wept and sought favor from God. It's a broken-hearted Jacob. And so now the killer question, which will reveal if Jacob is really ready to be saved. What's the killer question? Seems pretty innocuous, verse 27, but think about it. So he said to him, "What is your name?" Well, someone's thinking, what's the big deal? His name's Jacob. But this is the Bible. These are Bible times. We're living in the time when names are not just words. A name is a statement of your identity. Your name captures who you really are. We understand that, don't we? If I say to you, John Terry, it's more than just a name, isn't it? The name John Terry brings with it all the baggage of John Terry. So when God says to Jacob, "What is your name?" and he says, "Jacob," he's owning up at last, isn't he, to who he really is. Is me? My identity? I think you know. I'm the deceiver. I'm the man who walks through this world thinking he can get whatever he wants. I'm the sinner. That's who I really am. And Jacob, perhaps for the first time, is facing up to who he really is. He's facing up to his past. That liar, that cheat, that deceiver. He's facing up to his guilt. And there, as he clings hold of God, he's saying, "I am at your mercy." Although he's clinging on to the Lord, there's another sense, isn't there? If you're clinging on to someone and you're wrestling with them and you're holding on and you won't let go, there's another sense, isn't it, in which you're falling upon their kind arms. He's holding on. God could smash him to one side, but he's holding on because he knows they're kind arms. And he's all he's got left. And he's falling upon those kind arms. "God, be merciful to me, Jacob. God, be merciful to me, a sinner." So what will God do? Will he shake himself loose? Walk away? Verse 28. He said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed." God changes his name. There's a sense in which God is saying, if I have conquered you with one touch, then Jacob, you have conquered me by refusing to let go. I will bless you. I will save you. From now on, your name is Israel. Lots of ideas of exactly what it means. It probably means God fights. There's a sense in which Jacob is the man conquered by God. There's another sense in which Jacob is the man who's conquered God. There's a new name. Because he has a new identity. He's become a new man with a new heart, no longer walking through this world living for himself, because he knows where that's got him. He's now Israel. He's a lover of God. And Jacob, Israel, has become a believer. And like every believer, what's his first desire? It's to know more of God, isn't it? Because he says, verse 29, then Jacob asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. He's entered into a relationship. It's a face-to-face relationship. And the first thing he says, which every young new believer says, I want to know more of God. Tell me your name. And God says to him, verse 29, why is it that you ask about my name? All in good time. You'll discover more and more who I am, Jacob. Verse 29, and he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I've seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. I've seen God face to face, and I've lived to tell the tale. And then we read, just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. Jacob is never going to forget that meeting, is it? Is he? It's changed him forever. He's limping along, but inside he's leaping for joy. He's limping along, but he's no longer trusting himself. He's leaning upon his God. He's become a believer. He's a converted man. Well, is everything now fine? Well, if you read on, you'll see that God takes away Esau's anger. But there will be for Jacob many more difficult days ahead. But this is a new Jacob. This stubborn sheep has come home. He's found the shepherd. Or rather, the shepherd has found him. So there will be difficult days ahead for Jacob. But there will be no evil days. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And so we close our third point. How can I become a believer? Well, it's time to tune in if you haven't been tuning in up until now. Maybe like Jacob, you've grown up in a Christian home. Maybe not. Maybe like Jacob, you're smart. You can get what you want. You can outwit other people. Maybe not. But whatever your situation, you are like Jacob in this respect. You look after number one. You put yourself first. When it comes to big decisions, small decisions, what's in it for me? And you don't need God. Well, you like the thought, probably like Jacob, you like the thought of God being there for me. That's a nice thought, isn't it? I love that thought. God's there for me. God will protect me. God will be with me wherever I go. That's a lovely thought. But I don't want a relationship with him. I don't want a relationship with him that might change things. But like Jacob, where has it got you? Have you made enemies? Are there members of your family out to get you? Is your personal life a mess? Have sins come back to bite you? And maybe like Jacob, you're running out of options. You went looking for happiness. Quick on your feet. You'll find it. I'll try this. I'll do that. I'll go there. I'll be with this person. But actually, all that's happened is that you've been driven into a corner. Maybe tonight we can say this. Whoever would want to swap places with you in your state, in your situation? So why hasn't it worked out? Okay, you've been fighting with others. You've been wrestling with others. But you see, all along, just like Jacob, the real one you've been wrestling with is God. And God could crush you. With a thought, he could send you to hell before I count to three. One, two. But he hasn't, has he? In fact, like Jacob, God has brought you to your knees with nothing more than a gentle touch, and your life is a mess. You've nowhere to go. And God says this to you tonight, verse 26. He says, let me go. He says, you've been wrestling with me and I have won. So let me go. Shall I leave you? I've met with you through my people. I've met with you through my word. I've protected you. I've been with you. But it's changed absolutely nothing. So shall I leave you? Shall I shake myself free of you and walk away? And that's the question God is asking you tonight. To walk away and to leave you. So what's your answer? What do you want? Do you want God to leave you and never to return? Or do you want him to bless you? What did Jacob say? I will not let you go unless you bless me. Is that what you want? Tonight, do you want God more than anything else in the world? Do you want God more than anyone else in the world? Do you want this night a face-to-face relationship with him? Do you want him to bless you? Do you want him to save you? Do you? Then tonight you must answer this question. It's in verse 27. And God asks you that question tonight. What is your name? Are you going to own up to who you really are? You can own up to your past. You can own up to the way things are now. Yeah? That you're a liar. That you're a cheat. That you do dirty things. That you think you deserve better. That you have it in for people and try to get one up on people. That you're the one who looks after yourself and puts yourself first. You're the person who thinks, I don't need God. I don't mind him there for me, but I don't need him. Own up. Is that who you really are? What is your name? So what will you say? Me, Lord? I think you know. I think you know my name. I'm the sinner. And therefore, will you tonight, like Jacob, refuse to let go? I can't let you go, God. I now see I need you. I need you. And I'm going to hold on to you. And I'm going to fall upon your kind arms. And I'm going to plead with you to bless me, the sinner. Oh, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. What is your name? And you know, if you don't give God an answer now, God will ask you the same question on Judgment Day. Only then there'll be no God to cling to and no blessing to gain. And God will throw you into hell. Do you want God to bless you? Do you really want him? Do you want him more than anything else in the world? Then tell him your sin. Tell him you want a relationship. Tell him you want it to be face to face and real. Tell him I'm not going to let you go. I'm going to pray. I'm going to plead until you bless me. Until you save me. And if you do, then God is true to his word. And he will bless you. And he'll make all things new. He'll give you a new name in that sense. Oh, it'll... You'll still look the same. It's the same old skin. It'll be a new you looking out with new desires to know and to love and to walk with God. I will not let you go, said Jacob, until you bless me. God is here tonight. God speaks to you through his word. Thinking of some of you growing up in godly homes, you know the gospel. There's more of Jacob in you than ever you'd think. Do you want God more than anyone, anything else in the world? Is that the cry of your heart? And you see, Jacob asked a question, didn't he? He said, what's your name? And if you ask him this night the same question, tell me your name, he'll answer you. He'll give you the answer this time. My name is Jesus. The Jesus who came not to condemn, but to save. The Jesus who died on the cross to save the guilty. The Jesus who has come here this night to find my stubborn sheep that I've driven into a corner. The Jesus who has come here to take you home. Will you meet him this night? Will you see the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ? Will you see the loveliness, the grace, the beauty, the majesty, the love of God in Jesus Christ? Will you, through Jesus, enter into a face-to-face relationship with God? That is how you can become a believer tonight.